I want to wish you all a very good morning. And I really, Ken and I just are so appreciative that you guys have invited us to come and share our ministry with you. We have a ministry of music, hope, and encouragement. So before I begin, let's bow our heads. Dear Lord, please let your words be my words in your house today. Amen. My story isn't very pretty, but it is miraculous. And if you don't believe in miracles, maybe today after you hear me speak, you will. Because there is going to be a miracle that happens this morning, right here. And remind me at the end of the service to tell you what it was. But you are going to see a miracle this morning. I used to think that miracles were just something that happened many centuries ago across the world, maybe in China or somewhere. But I didn't believe that God would care enough about me to work them on my behalf. How fortunate and happy I am today and grateful to know that He does. He works them all the time. We just need to know where to look, and we need to know how to do certain things in order to unlock the power of the Holy Spirit in our lives. I was born in Asheville, North Carolina. My parents were Adventists. My father actually grew up on the campus of Mount Pisgah Academy. Some of you are familiar with the school in Asheville. His parents were some of the founders, and they actually ran the school for about 38 years. So I grew up in an Adventist home. We lived a mile from the academy. My father practiced medicine, and I was one of seven children. Number six, I'm the youngest girl. And our family, I guess from the outside, probably looked fairly successful. My siblings were all musicians and were all extroverted and, seemed to be, I guess, do pretty well scholastically until I came along. But we had a secret. We had a family secret, and our mouths were closed by fear. The secret was that our mom had substantial mental health issues, and she was very abusive. Now, in our family, we were not allowed to talk about it. We were not allowed to feel it, and we certainly couldn't tell. So in the community, in the church, we were always doing special music or playing for services or this or that. In the school, with our friends, we weren't allowed to talk about when we got behind closed doors. My mom changed into someone very, very different. Now, I too have mental health issues. And when someone is abused, starting from a child, when you're abused, generally, the abuse, you will be also become an abuser. It turns either outward onto others, or you turn it on yourself. And I turned it on me. The abuse that I turned on myself, well, first of all, at the age of seven is when my mom's abuse of me really ramped up. And when I say abuse, there was all kinds, all forms of abuse, all different kinds. And one of the forms of abuse was she was extremely controlling. She controlled every bite that I ate. And so at the age of seven, I started trying to assert my will and eating behind her back, and I started gaining weight. Well, this would never do, because our family image was the most important thing, far more important than family members. So she and I started having a battle over food when I was 7 years old. She wasn't about to have a fat daughter. Never mind that she herself was tipping the scales at well over 200 pounds. But, I know today that I can't spot it unless I've got it. And when I see somebody if there's something about him or her that bothers me, I have learned to say, there's just something about him that I can't stand about me. Because see, the thing is that it's easier for me to seek out and punish in someone else the things that I hate about me. And it makes it easier for me to not acknowledge that that resides inside my heart too. So she was punishing in me the things that she hated about her. And she was sick. Now, back then, there was so much stigma about mental illness that there was no way in the world that she was going to go for help. No way in the world. Because people would say, oh, she was afraid of what they would say. She was afraid they'd say, Mrs. Waller's crazy. You know, Dr. Waller married a crazy woman. Well, and so her mental illness was untreated for her entire life. Fortunately, I know today I am recovering from major depressive disorder, from anxiety, and also from obsessive compulsive disorder. And recovery is not only possible, it's probable if we do a few simple things, usually a few simple things that we don't really want to do. But our actions give us traction going toward, you know, advancing toward our goals and towards becoming the kind of people that God wants us to be. So I started eating compulsively. I found out because, see, I'm an extrovert. I'm very extroverted. And extroverts process events, thoughts, and ideas by talking about them. Introverts, on the other hand, process events and things that happen by thinking about them. But I'm an extrovert. And so because I wasn't allowed to talk about what was going on, I had all these unprocessed things in my head and all these unfelt feelings. So I needed to numb them. And I discovered very early that if I ate way too much food, that it would help anesthetize my feelings. As I was growing up, I was desperately afraid that anybody should find out how bad I really was. See, because I had been told from the time I was this tall, the devil's in your heart. That's spiritual abuse, you know. Children believe what they're told. And I believed that the devil was in my heart and I was going to hell. Just heaven was not an option for me. And so I grew up without any hope. How wonderful it is to know today that Jesus Christ is in love with me and can't wait to spend all eternity with me. And you and you and you and you and all of us cannot wait to spend eternity with us. But that wasn't what I learned until I was about 44 years old. Now, by the time I was 44 years old, had I set out from childhood to destroy my life in every single conceivable way, I could not have done a better job than I did absolutely unintentionally. You see, I was an alcoholic. I had been in bed for 2 years. I had lost a job through a reduction in force, and I weighed 500 pounds, and nobody would hire me. I could barely hobble. I could barely breathe. And I was drinking almost a half gallon of gin every night. I was helpless. I was hopeless. And so when I lost my job, I looked for work for about 2 weeks, couldn't find anything. So I decided to get into bed and just began begging God to let me die. I made the mistake of believing what I thought. That's not good for me. My brain isn't really a safe playground for me to play in unsupervised. But what happened was, God kept interrupting my death. Because see, not only was I drinking almost a half gallon of gin, anybody who knows anything really about alcoholism may know that after you drink way too much, your body goes into basically a coma from alcohol poisoning. I called it passing out, But what it really was is I was, my body had was so poisoned by alcohol that I became unconscious. In order to, and when I would come to after being unconscious, my head would pound like somebody was hitting me with a sledgehammer. My stomach would be in knots. My pulse would be racing over 200 beats a minute, and it would taste like something had crawled in my mouth and died. Ugh. Terrible pounding headache, though, and my pulse would just be racing. So in order to try to sleep through that, right before I passed out, I would also take Ambien, a sleeping pill, Klonopin, which is an anti-anxiety drug, and Flexeril, which is a muscle relaxant, prescribed by my doctor, who did not know I was an alcoholic. I was also taking two antidepressants in an attempt to feel less depressed. But in an attempt to feel less depressed, I was also sucking down mass quantities of depression in liquid form, gin. So the antidepressants weren't working. Surprise, surprise, surprise. I was filled with self-hatred. I was filled with guilt, remorse, shame. And everything I did or everything that I refrained from doing was driven by fear, 100%. If I went somewhere, it was because I was afraid not to. If I stayed at home, it was because I was afraid to leave. And that's mostly what I did. I stayed at home. There were times when I did not leave my apartment for a month at a time. I had married a party buddy along the way. You know, when we live a certain lifestyle, we want other people to do it too. And, you know, we had fun for a little bit, and then our marriage didn't work very well. And especially by the time I had taken to bed deciding I was just going to beg God to let me die, and, you know, he thought that a wife should be at least cooking and cleaning some, and I was like, I just want to die. You know, I checked out. Stop the world, I want to get off. And so, let's just say he did not master the art of monogamy. So eventually that marriage failed. After I'd been in bed for 2 years, God just wouldn't let me die, and I thank him every day for that. He interrupted my death because he knew that at some point when I was miserable enough, that I would be given the gift of desperation and I would become willing to do things that I did not want to do, like putting the plug in the jug and going for help with others who had a problem with alcohol themselves and knew how to stop, and better yet, knew how to get close enough to God where they could tap into his power. So I started with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm very grateful. God actually brought me to AA, and AA brought me to God. I didn't know I was so angry at him. I was so angry at him for sticking me with a mom who was so abusive, who not only didn't love me, but hated me. Finally, when I was about 30 years old, she was able to love me some. But, you know, I was just so mad at him. Like, dude, what's up with this? Why did you do this to me? Where were you? Where were you? He was there. You see, he gives us freedom of choice. And we can use, you know, within each of us is the capacity for great good and also great evil. It just depends on which one we give our power to. So in AA, you know, one of the steps is I had to come to believe in a God that would love me and help me. And I didn't know how to do that. And a very wise woman said, well, just ask him. So I would do this with one eye open. Okay, God, if you're up there, and you care about me, help me stay sober today and give me an understanding of you that's going to work for me, because I really don't know what to think. Now, I had tried to stop drinking before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I threw all my willpower at it, everything I could do, and I only lasted for 6 days without a drink. I waited a couple days, drank again, and then I tried again and I made it for 2 days. I was licked. And nobody likes to admit defeat, and I surely didn't, but I had absolutely ruined my life. And you know what? Another thing I learned along my spiritual journey is that I no longer have to be ashamed of my past, and I can see absolutely how it helps others, because if I can recover, anybody can recover. If I can find a God of love who changes me from within, He can change anyone from within. And a lot of people don't have to take the addiction elevator all the way to the gates of hell and death like I did. But no matter where it is that we hit a bottom and say, okay, I need to make some changes in my life, no matter where that is, the good Lord is still in the miracle business. So I got sober actually in 2004. I did pray that prayer, help me to stay sober, and give me an understanding of you that works for me. And I started, my first miracle that I experienced was when God removed that thing in my head that kept me jonesing for a drink all the time. That thing in my head that kept me going to the liquor store even when I really didn't want to go. That thing in my head that told me, you can't live without alcohol. You need every bit of anesthesia it provides and a whole lot more. God removed that a few weeks after I went to AA. It didn't leave with a brass band. All of a sudden, one morning, the fog kind of cleared, and I realized, I'm not jonesing for a drink. And I didn't jones for a drink yesterday or the day before. This is a miracle. This is a miracle. And you know what that miracle did for me? It showed me how much God loves me. My mom was wrong. She was a sick person. And I'm a sick person. You know, she was filled with resentment and fear and all these things. You know, resentment, guilt, shame, self-loathing, all those things, just like me. Her stepmother had abused her pretty much like she abused me. So it had been passed along to her when she was a little girl, starting at age 7. But you know what? The abuse stops here. And I'm able to tell my story. And I'm able to say to people, there is hope for you. Because let me tell you, I have learned that for every Goliath you have in your life, there is a stone. I don't care if you're living with somebody who abuses you in every way possible and held you hostage in every way possible. Every Goliath, there is a stone, and the Lord our God can help you aim that stone or can do it for you. You may have to do a few simple things that you don't really want to do. But when we ask for help, and I've learned how to ask God for help while I'm tying my shoes and getting ready to take an action, because just asking God for help and then not taking action, that doesn't do any good for me. And that's what that verse in the Bible that says faith without works avails nothing, that's what that means. We ask God for help and then we start taking action. And then He honors our efforts magnificently. Magnificently. So you may need to do a few things that you don't want to. If you're overwhelmed by fear, ask God to remove your fear. Talk to somebody about it. Let somebody know. I needed to talk about my stuff. I needed to process all this stuff so that I could heal. And you know what I found out? I had never felt like I belonged in the world, not in my family, my church, my school, anywhere. Never had I had zero sense of belonging. The thing that helps me belong is when I can show my warts to somebody else and they show me theirs. And they utter or I utter that magic phrase, my favorite phrase in the whole English language, me too. in the Bible, when it tells us to confess your faults to one another, what that means, it doesn't mean, okay, go expose the worst in yourselves to each other so that they can gossip about you, ridicule you, and make you feel even worse than you feel. It's about helping each other. Our difficulties, our character defects draw us together. So if you are being abused, and Ken, could I get you to change this light, please? If you are being abused, or you suspect someone else is being abused, or you know someone else is being abused, what should you do? And I have just a few things here to help. Now, first of all, a prayer that really works for me, because I prayed a lot of prayers in my lifetime that didn't work, but this one works. Ask God to give you intuitive thoughts, words and actions to know how to help or how to escape the situation you're in. If you suspect abuse and it has not been confirmed, and you may even try to ask gently and there's no real response, just offer to help and say, I just feel like there's something going on with you, and I just want you to know you're on my heart, you're in my thoughts and my prayers, and if I could do anything to help you, please don't hesitate to do so. And if you follow that by disclosing something in your life that you're struggling with, that may make it safe for her to tell you what's going on in hers. If not, just keep praying and keep looking for opportunities to sow those seeds. If someone does disclose or you find out that they're being abused, it's very important when we're being abused or have been abused for people to believe us. And so say, I believe you, and I'm willing to do whatever I can to help you. Because we all need help. And furthermore, helping someone else has a great benefit. Because I had no self-esteem. Zero, zero, zero self-esteem. And the way I found to get self-esteem is to do esteemable things. And there's nothing more esteemable than I found than to help others. So see, it benefits me when I'm helping others probably more than it helps the other person even. So if you're feeling badly about yourself, run, not walk, and find somebody who needs help and do something to help them. Okay, very important. Safety has to come first. Make sure that safety is a huge priority, not only the woman or person involved who's being abused, but yourself as well. Because we don't want anybody to get hurt worse. Okay. If there's a woman or girl being abused, she's going to need some information about resources. I actually have a handout, a couple of handouts today. They're out there. I think they'll be passed out at the end of the service. One of them is information about local resources here in the Aiken area for domestic abuse. And one of the organizations even has a batterers. Is that you guys, Cumby? Okay. Cumby has they have help for people who are batterers, who are abusers. Because let me tell you, they were probably abused too. And they just turned it outward instead of inward. Now, I'm glad that I turned mine inward rather than outward. But God can change all of our hearts. Offer to sit with her. Sometimes the thought of taking an action is so overwhelming, and if just somebody sits there with you, or picks up the phone and calls a number and hands it to, pick up the phone, call a number and say, here, talk to these people. Tell them what's going on. You can offer to babysit, drive her to a shelter or to her doctor or to the pastor or someone. Offer babysitting. If she needs to use a computer and is afraid to use one at home, for instance, maybe her abuser is monitoring what websites she's going to, etc., offer use of your computer. You know, give her a ride if you can. Remember to be safe, but also remember that God is with you and that for every Goliath, there is a stone. And this is important. Rely on professionals. Don't just say to her, okay, girl, you need to leave. Pack your bag and let's go. Because that would put both of you in danger generally. Rely on the professionals because they know how to do this. They've helped many other people, and many of them have actually done the same thing, escaped from abuse themselves. And so they can, you know, it's something that can actually be done planfully and in a way that's safer and makes more sense, more logical. Because, you know, basically we all want to be able to live in a place, an environment where we can grow and flower. Because if somebody you're living with is dimming your light, that's not God's plan. He said, let your light shine. Don't surround yourself with people who suck the oxygen out of the room. All right. And I have some contact information for me. I'm running, I guess, getting to where I need to close. My time is passing here. But if you would like to contact me, you're welcome to. I also am coming back, I believe, this fall in October. I'll be doing a two-day seminar on depression, how to heal, and how to help. It will be for people who struggle with depression, but also for people who know someone who struggles with depression. And even in our churches, I understand that depression among the parishioners and in the community is the biggest, most difficult issue that pastors deal with. And so, actually, a pastor that I worked with some months ago asked me to develop a seminar. He was like, we need this, please, please, please. So I'm working some with the conference, with Debbie Rapp a little bit, and I'm going to be coming back here to present the seminar in October. So Becky will publish the information about that as it comes. But I want you to know that whatever happens, God is the God of all. He doesn't have any grandchildren. He doesn't have any stepchildren. You are his beloved child. And as Christians, it is our responsibility to protect God's creatures from abuse, to stand up to injustice and oppression wherever we find it. And what really turned the tide for me, because I was a great victim, that was what I was used to, so I would choose abusive people to be with. Somebody looked at me and said, as a Christian, is it your job to protect God's creatures from abuse? And I said, yes. And she said, okay, Celia, you are God's creature. So it is your job to protect yourself from abuse. That was one of those life-changing moments. And you can also, if you're working with somebody who is experiencing abuse, or if you are yourself, just know that this is not what God intends for you. The God of love, who is still in the miracle business, heard the cries of a 500-pound, alcoholic, depressed, crying, self-pity-filled, resentful, fearful woman. And he will hear your cries, too. Now, I told you at the beginning of the sermon that I was going to, you were going to be watching a miracle. You would see a miracle. And here it is. I used to weigh 500 pounds, and I have significant arthritis in both hips and both knees. Usually I can only stand for about 10 minutes without having extreme pain. I can walk a little bit. Walking isn't as painful as standing still. But I want you to know the miracle is, and this happens every time I speak, I have no pain, none. No twinge, no discomfort, anything at all. So you today have seen a miracle, and if you're not seeing them in your own life, ask God to give you an understanding of him that works for you. Thank you for letting me share. I love you all.
And she gave you some pointers there. We have with us Barbara Sanders, and she is a counselor at the Cumbie Center, which is located on Lancaster Street. And I asked her, I thought this would be a good time to come in and give you some information about what the Cumbie Center is and the services that it can provide. And she brought a lot of pamphlets and some goodies for us, because there are so many different kinds of abuse. And so Barbara, at this opportunity, and the way I know Barbara is that I sit on the board of the Cumbie Center, and I'm the treasurer there, and I've seen the work that she does, and she is an excellent speaker, and she can give us some information on what the Cumbie Center does.
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing? Well, I should say good afternoon, because it's kind of like in between there. My name is Barbara Sanders. I do work at the Cumbie Center. Can everybody hear me?
Okay, so you want me right here. Normally, I move and talk when I speak, because it helps me to read faces. It helps me to see if people are getting what I'm saying and the work that I do. I work at the Cumbie Center as a crisis counselor and a case manager, and we see people from all walks of life. There is not a person of any race, creed, religion that I have not seen and that I've not worked with. And one thing that I find is everybody hurts. Everybody is in pain. Everybody is going through something. Abuse doesn't care. Doesn't matter what you look like, where you live, which side of town you grew up on, where you come from, it doesn't. Because abuse is not about you. It's about the person doing the abuse to you. Because they hurt. They're in pain. And one thing I found is that hurt people hurt people. Miss Celia, you made a great point earlier about your mom. She was hurting. She was taught hurt. And a great fact to learn about abuse is, I watched the children this morning, and I'm so glad you talked about what comes in goes out through one form or another. Abuse is learned as a child, and if there is not intervention, if there is not something done to change those thoughts, to change those patterns, the abuser as a child does turn it either inward, but they still learn. And then they begin to turn it out, because one thing they learn is, I can get what I want because I've seen this person do this to get what they want. So I'm going to do the same thing. And they in turn start hurting other people. And again, hurt people hurt people. So how do we at the Cumbie Center help people? Well, it takes a lot to come through our door. Usually people come to us as a last resort. They may have been forced to come by another agency. But one thing they've learned is, I can't do this on my own. I've tried everything under the sun. I've stood on my head naked, and it hasn't worked. No matter what I do, it's not good enough. I'll never be thin enough, pretty enough, tall enough, short enough. I won't have the right hair. I won't wear this. I won't do that. So I'm hurting. And we help them. One thing I do when anyone enters our door and I talk to anyone, even on the phone, is I say, thank you. Thank you for trusting me enough to want to share your story with me. Now let's see what we can do to help you. Not what I can do, because I can't do anything. I have to have you invested in your own growth. And that's what we teach our clients. It's a growth process. But what do you want to do? And for a lot of our clients, they don't know what they want to do because they've never been given the opportunity. They've been isolated. They've been hurt. They've been taken apart from their family, their friends, by someone who told them, I love you. And I do this because I love you. I do this because you won't listen to me. You won't do what I tell you to do. So all of their options, all of their choices are taken away.
And they become that frightened person who can't move, think, or breathe. We call it toxic mobility. You've seen deers when they're caught in the headlights? That's what our clients are. They can't move. They can't think because they haven't been given that to the opportunity to do that. So at the Combi Center, we allow them to breathe. We offer them safety. Safety is our primary concern for our clients, getting them to safety. Everybody who comes in can't leave today because of other factors. They may have been told, if you leave me, I'm going to hunt you down and I will kill you. That's a big factor to make you stay. They can't leave because they don't have the money. Where are you going to go with two or three children or even one child? And your family has told you, don't call me until you leave him. I told you not to get with her. Where are you going to go? Who are you going to call? You can call me. I'll ask you, what do you want? How can I help you? And that's what we do at the Combi Center. We have a shelter at the Combi Center. It's in a safe location, but it serves six counties: Aiken, Allendale, Barnwell, Saluda, and McCormick counties, and Edgefield County. So you can imagine one shelter housing a lot of people who are running literally for their lives. We get clients in from across the nation because they are running, because their abuser has told them, I will find you. And believe me, they go through a lot of measures, installing tracking devices on their cars, tracking devices on your phone. So we have to stay abreast at the Combi Center, and we have to think like an abuser. We have to think like they would think. And a lot of literature today says that abusers are mostly men. That's true, but ladies, we're catching up. You know, we're putting the high heels, spiked heels in somebody's head. We're shooting someone. We're cutting someone. We're verbally abusing someone, whether it's our mate, our partner, or our children. So we're catching up. Abuse is not only a male-dominated society. It is equal in gender. It is equal in race. It is equal in economic means. So we try to assist people, and safety is our primary concern. If we need to get law enforcement involved, we will. One thing we do at the Combi Center is we do orders of protection. And that is where we will prepare our clients, go to court, and they will ask a family court judge to tell this person, whether it's a man or a woman, to leave her alone. Leave her alone. Just don't call her, don't talk to her, don't email her. Don't snail mail her, don't put a plane ride through the sky. Don't do it. In the order of protection hearing, we can also now ask, if our clients are married, that our client has use of the home. Our client gets custody, temporary custody of the children, alimony, child support. We can even ask if the abuser is working, whether it's male or female, that our clients remain on their insurance policies. We can ask that our clients get a vehicle. A couple years ago, we couldn't ask for those things. But legislature has found out that in order for a person to leave a situation and stay gone, there are certain things that have to be put in place. Now, we don't stop our clients from going back and working on their relationships. We don't do that because one thing we found is that when a person leaves a relationship, they're going to go back 8 to 10 times. And that's okay. Because you leave and you learn a little. You go back because you think things are going to change. Some of the things that our clients find out are two things: love and hope. They stay in a relationship because they love this person. In spite of their faults, in spite of their insecurities, I love you. And I'm going to stay and I'm going to love you through this change. Even in the religious community, I'm going to love and I'm going to pray to God to change you. And they stay, and they leave, and they go back, and they learn something else, and they get a little bit more confidence in themselves. They learn, I can get a job, I can go online to school, I can do this. And they go back because there's hope. I love you, but I'm hoping if I do this, you'll change. And then our clients realize that hope is gone. One thing they learn is that I cannot fix you. I can't change you because I didn't break you. Abusers are broken. The pieces are gone. And we women, I'm sorry, I love y'all to death, but we can't fix our men. Men, you can't fix your women because you didn't break them. They have to want to, as you said earlier, help myself. I have to love you enough to want to change for you. We offer a batterers program. It's called the Unity Program. It is for our batterers. You can come in. You can learn what makes you do and think and act the way you act. And you can also learn new coping skills, because one thing I found in doing support groups, and I do 2 support groups every week at the Cumbie Center, Monday at 4, Thursday at 4. There is no set time for how long we stay, because we're there to learn. And one thing that everybody learns is a new coping skill. I got to get this bad stuff out of me. It's like poison, like you said. But if I take that out, what am I going to replace it with? So I teach people what to replace that low self-esteem, that lack of confidence, that I don't have a job, I don't have a place to stay. What am I going to do? Where are my children going to stay? I teach them resources, and I teach them to rely on yourself. Again, I can't fix it, but I can definitely help you. And I'll do that if you come once, 10, a million times. There's no set times that you can call me. I'm available 24 hours a day. Our office has a hotline, and it is open 24 hours a day. A live body answers that hotline. They'll find me, just say, you got to call, I need Barbara, you got to call Barbara. It happens. And I'll call you back. I will help you in any way that I can. And I want to close by telling you what an abuser looks like. There was this couple, and they were married, living together. And every morning, she would get up and make his breakfast. She would cook everything. We live in the South. She cooked grits, oatmeal, cream of wheat, toast, bacon, eggs, sausage, whatever. And every day, he found something wrong with it. You burn the toast, it's not brown enough. The coffee's cold, it's not warm enough. I wanted sausage, you cooked bacon. I wanted hash browns, you cooked grits. I wanted rice. No matter what it was, he found something wrong with it. So over the years, she started thinking and learning, because I want to make this work. I love this man. He's the father of my children. God told me to stay. And I'm going to pause right here and say, when God said, I married you in sickness and in health, till death do you part, for richer or for poor, it doesn't include abuse. Because the Bible also says, treat your wife, treat your spouse as you would treat yourself, because you are mine. So would you curse yourself? Would you put yourself down? Would you beat yourself? So that part of the Bible that says that you have to stay in sickness and in health, yes, because you're going to get sick. Not going to feel good some days. Some days you're going to have a dollar in the bank. Some days you're going to have $100 in the bank. That's what the Bible means. God didn't say stay here in pain. He provided resources. He provided people who know, counselors, agencies like mine. These are the people who can help you and get you back. And God will work on that person. He'll work on it. But he wants you to take care of yourself. So she was there and she was thinking and she's saying, I got it now. She woke up, she said, I got it. She cooked everything. She made it all. And she set the table and she had the napkin here and the cup here. And she had orange juice, apple juice, grape juice. And you know when you get a glass of juice and you know it's good because there's that one little tear rolling down the side of the glass? That's some good juice right there. And she called him and she said, honey, come on, I've got this food ready. Let's eat. And he came in and he sat down and he looked. And he looked. And he looked. And he looked. And finally he said, you picked the wrong egg to cook. Because he couldn't find anything else wrong. You picked the wrong egg. Out of all the eggs she cooked, which one said, cook me, cook me. He wants me. That's how an abuser is, no matter what you do. You cannot do it. And that is their purpose, to keep you off balance. So you won't know And you won't know to trust yourself, trust your inner strengths. So if you need something, if you have a question, if you know someone, just have them call and give me a what if. And I'll say, how about? Thank you so much.
God's calling us as a church to end it now. And our conference is taking this on, this campaign on, and Celia and her husband are working with this campaign. We need to get out of our pews. We need to ask the Lord where He wants us to serve, what He wants us to work with, what He wants us to do in our community to help end the abuse. There is no one in here who doesn't know someone that's been abused. You may not be willing to admit it, but you do. I grew up and did not think that I was ever be touched by that. And as Celia said, being in the church, it's hidden. And it's there. And we do need to help. And I would like to ask you this morning, if it the Lord is working on your heart, that you will give a donation to Celia and her husband to help them get their ministry going. There's many, many, many churches in our conference alone and all over that need to hear this message. And they're willing to go out. And that is a big sacrifice and takes money. So if you are willing, please be see the ushers in the back. They have a basket, and you're welcome to give now or wait. After our lunch, she is going to be doing a concert, so you can also give then. And I don't know, did you bring some of your DVDs? So if you give how much? A donation of $10 or more, you're welcome to take one of her CDs with you that she has already made, and she's even working on another CD of her beautiful voice and Ken's. So we want to thank you for listening this morning, and definitely for the Cumbie Center for coming. We would love to see how the Lord leads us maybe to work with the Cumbie Center and do some things with them as well.